This is RSBNB Update, episode 625, recorded Thursday, June 29th, 2017. 120 Slayer for Skillers. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to RSBNB Update. This week, Tannis and Mr. Bistro are here, as they have been for the entire month-long focus of Menophos. Welcome back, guys.
Hello.
Thank you.
Great to have you here and to discuss what turned out to be a patch week this week. We found out last Friday that the Magister will be delayed until July 3rd, but that's no problem. That gives us some time to focus on the patch notes and maybe some of the other little things that come into play this week, such as the July behind the scenes live stream that we saw and some really interesting tidbits out of that. Of course, along with that, we have questions and some really scary tech news that I will provide for you guys. So let's jump right in and talk about some patch notes this week. We'll get to the, of course, headlining patch note here, the Searer offhand, in just a moment. But first, starting off with patch notes, while using combat channeling abilities, you can now click away to stop the channel, and an informative tooltip has also been added to summoning pouches. So I'm guessing what it means for channeling abilities is like the ones that came from Shattered Worlds, for example, maybe also Detonate to stop the channeling. Is that what I'm reading into here correctly? I think
so.
Yeah.
Because the term channeling is something that it seems more like an internal term. And if you don't know what the abilities are, might have been a good idea to provide some examples in the notes here. But nonetheless, these tooltips on the summoning pouches, they now say what the familiars will do. So you can just go through your bank and see what they do. So Pack Yak says it stores 28 items for 30 minutes and so on and so forth. Light familiar, of course, does its thing where it can allow you to automatically skip parts of the what's that clan's name? I'm forgetting the Pryftina's clan's name that has the agility course, but you guys get the idea.
Heffen.
Oh, there's the early onset RuneScape dementia again. But anyways, you guys will enjoy this one. Players now receive 250 reputation for each new Slayer monster added to the Slayer Codex, and retroactively 250 reputation was awarded for each one added. So what did you guys get here?
Boom! Yes!
Woo. Well, I guess I haven't really looked at my reputation, but I think I've got like maybe 15 creatures now in my codex. So
that was a nice little burst of reputation then.
Yeah, it bumped me up a reputation level. I noticed that last time I went to Menophos for my newest Corrupt Dust Devil's task.
Oh, good. All right.
Yeah, I noticed the same thing because I was like, I might be like five or six away from getting my 50 for the teleport. And so, yeah, it bumped me up pretty good.
All right. Strange rocks can now be obtained from all fishing spots, excluding those within Daemonheim.
That's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I'm not sure why it wasn't that case before, but I'm thinking maybe it was referring to the Menophos fishing spots here. Because I don't think I remember getting any rocks while I was doing my reputation fishing in Menophos.
That almost makes you think, like, how many things do they have to check off? Almost like if you were to do unit testing for when you do, like, same old, like, fishing spots or trees for things that you need to account for, like bird's nests and stuff like that.
Yeah, so that basically means that Jagex should probably have some form of an automated test to do all these things. Then, you know, back in the day, they probably didn't, but I could see that they might now. Next up, Acadia logs have the same junk chance as magic logs when disassembling. All right. That's interesting. And I mean, I guess you might want to do that because you can get those Acadia logs quite simply and a lot faster than you can get magic logs. And the really good part about this is that the magic logs and now Acadia logs junk chance is only 4.2%, which makes them really great tool to get simple parts from. And we all know how much we need simple parts.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So that's one thing that we'll be going back to Menophos for. The casket salvaging scrimshaw will now work while fishing in Menophos. So obviously this is another one of those Menophos cases of things that weren't ticked off before it came out. And it's good to see that has been fixed right on. Same thing with the polishing perk that now works on fish caught in the Ports District. Of course, the polishing perk is the perk you can put on your rod that will enable you to automatically transmute your items you receive to one better. So that's pretty good. Some of the Rune Treasure Trail armor has been renamed to prevent trade scams. They now follow this format. Rune Plate Body Bandos. Rune Plate Body Ceridoman. Because as you guys might recall, there is also Bandos Chestplate from God Wars Dungeon 1. And that could be confusing between the Treasure Hunter variety and the God Wars variety. And you can see where the opportunity for scam might arise.
I want to interject because I saw one in here that brings reference to 2 weeks ago when I was talking about the Talisman Staff. The Soul Talisman Staff can now be added to your keepsake box. So they did not forget about the Talisman Staffs.
Oh, good. And also with that, they did not forget about the tiaras as well if you want to make one of those for the Soul Obelisk. The Soul Altar. It's also now possible to extend the existing time of portables by using the extend portable option on your portable object. Previously, you would click your existing portable that you would have in your inventory and click it onto the portable that was on the ground. Now with this right-click option, I assume it just takes it out of your inventory. So it's a nice little usability tweak right there for those of us who use portable wells and the like. You can now buy and sell Menophos teleports on the exchange, including teleports to the Imperial Merchant Port District, Workers District, Sophonim Slayer Dungeon, and Shifting Tombs. I guess that'd be a good thing for... why would you need that? Because you need to do the quest to access Menophos. And if you're in the city...
Well, like, even for the Slayer Dungeon, there's no reason to not just lodestone to Menophos and go through the gate.
And then take the carpet.
No, like if you load stone to Menophos, you just have to go across the bridge.
How do you go across the bridge?
You're at the Menophos dungeon.
How do you go across the bridge?
I didn't know how to do the bridge.
Yeah, how do you do that?
You can't go back. You can only go to Menophos.
So you're saying
you can only go to Sophonim.
Yeah, how do you do that? I did not see any option to cross the bridge. I thought that was...
You have to talk to the guards and you just go right through. But you can't come back.
Oh, okay. Well, there we go. There's my idea for usability, because I was looking for a simple left click option there that would enable that.
Yeah. So if that was a pain in the ass to get to that dungeon.
Yeah, it was. It really was. I had no idea that was a thing.
I was just using the Wisp Colony teleport right outside the Max Guild. Do that from the garden. It was right there.
I does that take up one of the portals in the Max Guild?
It in the garden, yeah.
Well, you learn something new every day here. My portals are taken up. You guys, that's... Did you know about this, Tanis?
I didn't know about the bridge, no.
Or am I just a noob? What about the listeners? I wonder, do the listeners know?
I thought it was just such a basic thing. Like,
I thought that was going to be
go through this
and where the Magister was, and we didn't have access to it yet.
I didn't know why we couldn't go
like
through
on the bridge.
Yeah.
Oh no! If you look in the dungeon, it's clearly... The farther you get in there, thematically set. Like, there, it seems like there's areas of that dungeon that aren't open Like when you first go in, even on the first level, there's a couple boulders.
There's that option to smell the rock or something.
Yeah.
I don't know why that option is to smell the rock, but.
Yeah, that's kind of.
You can smell the corruption.
Yeah, there you go.
Just like the U.S. government.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You can just smell it.
Do you smell that smell?
A new option has been added to Wythian in Profunus. You're now able to exchange Motherlode Maw enhancers for Motherlode Maw shards at a 1-to-1 ratio. On top of this, you can exchange used enhancers for a percentage of a shard. Shout out to Mod Roly for doing this in his spare time. All right, for someone who doesn't have 150 in Dungeoneering, can you guys explain this, please?
That is really super awesome because so you get these enhancers and they're kind of like little helpers to help you get your comp or what, or even trim. Sometimes they're damage increasers too. But anyway, I've been trying to get as many of the livid farm ones as possible. So now I can trade in all the ones I don't want and get the livid ones.
Oh, and then they give you extra bonus livid farm reputation?
Yeah, give you like double livid farm. Yeah, double points or whatever.
So you still have to do livid farm then?
Yeah, you still have to do it, but a little bit less.
Basically bonus boosters.
Yeah, any little bit helps.
I honestly don't mind doing livid farm. It's pretty relaxing.
I hate it with a passion.
Me too.
And Shane likes to farm.
That's blasphemy to farming.
Oh, yeah, you got a point there.
I don't mind it so much.
Oh, God. Oh, my God.
I don't seek it out, but there are many things that are worse that I could be doing.
All right, moving on. Removing active scrimshaws will no longer require you to turn them off beforehand. All right, that's a nice little update.
That's cool.
Kind of like auras. I wish we could have an option like that.
Yeah.
Attuned crystal teleport armor and weapon seeds now have a destroy option instead of a drop option, which makes sense because no one else can pick them up. You can now disassemble crystal tree blossoms for a chance of crystal parts. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Very cool.
This is a very huge update because when Invention first came out, you used to be able to disassemble these. And then they patched it a day later so you could not for the crystal parts, which I think they also gave a rare chance of Saren too, but that has since been removed and they now only have a chance of crystal parts. And the reason you want this is because of the crystal tool siphon. Because if you were going to make crystal tool siphons beforehand, you would have to disassemble crystal longswords, crystal armor. And you know what the clincher about that was? Is that you only used to be able to get two of those per grand exchange buy limit period. So they were really a pain to get.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I got so many of those stocked up. I think I've maybe have used 10 or 20
right,
of them.
Because the only other real use for them is the Supreme Overload Salve or Perfect Plus Potion or whatever it was called that gives you a boost of all the perfect juju
the
options.
Gumbo.
There you
go. Throw it in the pot.
Yeah. And there's a 0% junk chance on these, and they often give simple parts, organic parts, with sometimes crystal parts, and very rarely healthy components. So as you can see, for someone who has been doing their crystal tree every day for a good portion of time since Prif came out, this is going to be huge for me if everyone can cash in on crystal parts.
Yeah. Are we at a point where someone can have 1,000 of them yet?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Because it is however long since Prif came out, right?
I know, but Prif came out
2015.
Oh, yeah, because you can get 2 a day.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can get 2 a day?
If you have done the task set, the Priftina's task set, an area.
Oh, okay. I haven't completed that.
Yeah, neither have I, but there's another something to do.
But it's a good one. You get that extra blossom.
No. I think I was really put off by the desert one and also the Mauritania one, leveling those idiots up all the 99.
I'm still doing that. Yeah, I know it sucks.
All right. Active spells now have a red hand our active spells now have a red outline for main hand spells and a yellow outline for the offhand spells. Of course, this is when you select what you're going to be doing with magic. So nice to be able to see this from a glance.
Yeah, that's nice. But I really haven't utilized using two spells with the main and offhand.
Yeah, I mean...
You almost forget that it's a thing.
Right. And, you know, everything that is weak to magic or weak to earth spells versus weak different to fire spells, we're at a high enough level in our equipment and our spells where we can just use the fire spell and not really feel any difference. So,
or you can be cheap and just use the polypore spell.
That's an option too.
Well, and sometimes... Like, I would use blood and ice, but, I mean, you're only getting the effect when it's an auto attack anyway, so I just quit doing that, you know?
Oh, there's an idea.
Because the auto attack actually uses your runes.
Mm-hmm.
Neat. It's also now possible to split the attack, strength, magic, defense, and constitution sub-tabs out of each of their own windows, and this is referring to the ability pages, which is something that has been a long time coming for the new interface system in EOC. So I guess people have finally got it out that they want that. Though I think it makes sense to have them combined right now, especially the attack strength ones, not so much the constitution defense, I don't feel. But... carrying on with this, you can now right-click effigies in your inventory to select skills. So I guess if you wanted to have a quick shortcut to that rather than going through the text and the dialogue option with the ancient effigies, that's there. An offhand has been added to pair with the Wand of Cywer. The Orb of the Cywer is now attainable from Hellwyr in the Heart of Gilinor. All right. This is going to be great for people who do God Wars Dungeon 2, I think, because what is the point of having a wand offhand or a main hand wand without having its offhand? I think this should have been added initially when it came into game. So
yeah, it should have, because at this point it's almost dead on arrival, which sucks because people have had too much time to, like, you know, you've got to find a different offhand for that.
What's our tier 90
option? I wouldn't say it's dead on arrival. I'd say that it's going to boost the amount of people killing that boss.
Right. And I think that could be that could be the ulterior motive for doing this, because I think, if I recall, Vindicta is the easiest one to kill.
No.
No?
No. Not in my opinion.
I would say it is, because that was the first one that I ended up killing, and I didn't have a problem with it.
Right.
See, I don't know. I think the Furious are the easiest to kill. Hellwear is kind of a pain. Vindicta is kind of in the middle. Like, it's, I can do it. I got to eat a little bit. What's his name? Greg is just AIDS. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't like him at all.
Our favorite Russian bull, Gigorvik.
Yeah.
Don't you just love how Jagex put the Russian name in game? And all the Russian NPCs in Phanifis?
I think there's some collusion there.
Could you imagine, like, Angel of Death version of a
I'm sure we'll get that in a few years once Telos has been mastered and all that, but... All right, now here's something that goes back to the old days of RuneScape. The stock of the following shops now resets at midnight GMT game time when possible. We intend to make this the case for all shops where applicable. So Garant's Fishy Business, Shanty Pass Shop, Lumbridge Fishing Supply, Fremenic Fishmonger, etc. Fish, so on and so forth, going down this list all the way down to... you know, Baba Yaga's Magic Shop, the Magic Guild Store with runes and stands, the Void Knight Magic Store, and Two Tabs Magical Market. So these all now restock at midnight GMT time. Now, I don't know if you guys remember this, but when RuneScape first came out, this is how stores operated, and they had to change this with the removal of free trade and whatnot, because people were capitalizing on this. And then that's when we got the case where each individual person has their own more limited stock. Now, all these stocks reset at this time. I haven't had a chance to see if it's worldwide yet for this, where you could just go to these stores and purchase them out of a community stock, or if this is just your stock that resets at this time. But we're getting closer back to that original point where all the stores would reset at a certain time. So this is very neat to see.
I'd like to see them do something with general stores, not to deviate too much from this update, but it just kind of brings me back to when general stores are actually used.
Oh, we have a question about this later, actually, in somewhat of a form. So it's good you brought that up.
Does that make it so it's a shared?
See, that's the thing. I haven't checked. Right now, it's not shared. I think they would say in the patch note if they change that, because that would be a really huge thing to enact change with.
Yeah, I mean, poor Iron Man would be so screwed. Yeah.
So I'm willing to bet that part of it stayed the same. So
okay.
All right. Now here's another huge update. The Slayer counter can now be expanded for further information on your Slayer points, your current task streak, and your current Slayer assignment's weakness. You just click the Slayer icon in the Slayer counter to expand its window.
Cool. Yeah. Nice.
This is a good update, and I do have one problem with this, and that is unless anyone listens to RSBNB update or reads the patch notes, you're not going to know this.
Yeah. Thing,
because there's no yeah. feedback that you can click on it. There's no little glowy option when you mouse over the Slayer counter to show, if you change this, it might do something different. There's no option for that. So I think if they were to add some kind of feedback in, making it more of like a button, we'd probably be great on that.
Something. I mean, it wasn't even in Mod Lee's patch note highlights. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Jeez. Well, I mean, those videos are very concise and whatnot, but in any case.
Well, they are, but wow.
Luck rings now also improve the rare drop table for Sophanim Slayer dungeon creatures. All right.
What? That explains a lot.
Oh?
Yeah.
What happened?
Man. Oh, it's just been nothing. You'd expect something from that dungeon, and there just hasn't been a single thing. And I have specifically taken task after task there.
And?
I haven't gotten any rare drop table stuff.
I did. Yeah, I did. When I did my Dust Devils, oh yeah, I got regular Dust Devil drops off the rare drop table. So, all right. I see you put this one in. There's now less chat when playing Sanabok to enter the Brimhaven dungeon.
Yeah. Like, what did he say before? Thank you for your contribution.
I know, right?
Does that mean there's like... And he wished you a glorious death.
Does he not wish you a glorious day anymore?
I don't know.
Or does he not thank you anymore? Either one makes him sound like a dick.
Okay. Well, there we go. So that's this week's patch notes update. Anything else that I missed that we could throw in that you guys think we should mention?
I think we covered it pretty well.
All right. Well, let's move on to this week's behind the scenes live stream, specifically covering the month ahead for June, or July rather. So this live stream was televised this week, and we learned a good deal of what's coming in July. We specifically learned that the Magister is now officially called a July update. We're also getting aura bags, prayer presets, tier 92 dies, the beach on July 31st, and what we have most been waiting for here at RSBNB update, achievements version 2.
Mm-hmm. So this and is, it was good too.
Yes, this Ooh. Is a much needed rework to the achievement system, and they previewed it quite a bit on stream here. So if you look at what they have open here, first and foremost, they have the new paths window, and that you can now pull out of the main hero tab, so you can dock it somewhere else on your screen if you would so like. And with this,
with many new paths,
mid-level, some high level as well. So that's going to be great to see how usable that's going to be. They also really revamped the overview section. It's more colorful, more intuitive. It shows you what tasks you have been working on and what you're almost finished. So it kind of, in that way, can send you off to a different direction. So, for example, here we see that in this test video, the Master Quester task is 98% complete. They also got an overview for categories, showing off skills, exploration, PVM, and comp tasks, all with nice little task bars there. They've also substantially reworked the way that the task list for max, comp, trimmed comp, and master quest cape work, in that they're more like how they used to be in the old window, more compact and kind of providing, I guess, what the players wanted for that regard, because it didn't feel the need to change them. They also got nifty little progress bars for how far along you are on each of these tasks as well, showing an icon for each of the capes. Also a new compact mode whenever you're going through these tasks. So if you don't want to see the little icon that's right next to the task, you can do that and hide them. Takes it up from about 5 tasks shown per screen all the way down to about, I'd want to say, 10 or 12, depending on what they decide on. Also, tasks are going to have their information added back to it, so there's going to be some that you can massively explode to show off all the various requirements to them, so that's going to be great. And it looks like what we're going to be seeing for the achievement tab, in particular all the task set, is we're going to be seeing requirements added back to those, which is, I think, something that a lot of us have wanted. So yeah. Overall, this looks really good. We don't have a firm release date for this as of yet, but I do think this will be the headlining update for July, because like it or not, the old task system was better than the one that they brought in, and there were lots of UI troubles with this. And I think it's clear that, you know, when they did this, there was no real testing, there was no real connection of what it used to be and where people wanted to go correctly with this. So yeah, overall it just looks a lot better. Do you guys have any takeaways from this, how the task system looked here?
Well, I told you, have faith, Shane. They weren't done.
Yeah,
they weren't going to leave that hanging. The one thing that I'm really glad is they're taking the comp and putting it back to where it was, the way that it used to be.
Yeah,
just a list.
And you can even get that with really the compressed cool mode, so you don't need the little RuneScape icon on it. And you know, that's something that is up for question, because like, why do you need a RuneScape icon that's the same for all the 500 tasks, right? You don't need that.
Yeah. Yeah, and they added so much more mouse over text, which I thought was one of the glaring oversights when it first came out. So that's really good. Really happy about that.
Yeah, and you know, with the compressed mode, they could have almost made compressed mode the default and added the images to that. I think that would have looked a lot better, maybe. But then again, I don't know how this is going to perform on a high DPI screen or what the case that is for RuneScape's interfaces, because we know that's always a question. How does RuneScape perform on those high DPI screens that some people have nowadays? So, another thing that they're bringing in with this is their quote unquote gamer score, as it's called internally now, the Rune score.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is something we were promised beforehand and people wanted when we were talking about this. So it's good to see this has finally arrived. And I mean, I'm not going to be too fussed about that, but I can see this giving a whole new, way to play RuneScape for people who want to just, you know, go hunt achievements and get everything complete. Right.
Well, this is going to be fun. You can be competitive with your friends and have fun. And, this is cool. I mean, it's like it kind of proves that the first release of the achievement rework was, I mean, half baked. It was so unfinished, but we're getting a lot of the features that were supposed to be there in the first place.
And, you know, the biggest thing is the comparison feature to your friend. Now, if you examine someone, there's a new achievements tab where you can see how many achievements they have completed. And there's going to be 4 icons that show the most recent achievements that that person has completed. So if people want, they're going to be able to display not only achievements that they have completed, but they'll be able to bookmark specific achievements to show off that, hey, I might have just completed the last quest or something like that.
I was so looking forward to that, you know, because I thought that would give the players that, like, hadn't quite made it to comp, like, you know, like myself, but have done quite a considerable amount on the way there, yeah. You know, you would be able to show that, but then we didn't get it, and I was pretty disappointed.
And they took it one step further as well, in that you can open the other person's achievements in the achievements window and compare them to your own, and you'll be able to go through the entire list of achievements and see how many they have done, and you can compare them. Have I done this? Have they done this? And so on and so forth.
So. See, we got everything but a little quick chat message where you can call your friend a noob.
Yeah. And, you know, this is what the revamped achievement systems should have been. And I am very happy that what we're seeing right here looks to be something that's going to be a lot more usable than when it came out. And ultimately, I feel all right now that we were kind of hard on this update when it came out, because I think you guys who listen to this podcast will admit that we were as hard on this achievements update as we were on the ARC. And the achievements system is going to be fixed, and I think it's going to be worth the wait, so I'm pleased with that. And my hope for this going forward is that Jagex has actually learned something about how to conduct these kind of updates and what to include to in order to make something fully complete for the community. So that's going to be great whenever it comes out in July. Do you guys have anything else on the achievements?
Not really.
I'm just happy about it. I know we were, you know, you guys broke it down on the podcast. I tried to break it down with, I think, a little glimmer of hope, a little bit more. And I'm just happy that this is working out. I had faith. And did you notice in this stream that, Mod Osborne was kind of hard on himself, wasn't he? I mean,
yeah, he was. And we'll get to that in just a moment, especially about the Menaphos stuff. I want to talk about the other ninja updates coming in July, including the Aura Bag, which is a Mod Timbo project, which, I mean, when you think about it, how long has it been since we've wanted an Aura Bag?
Yeah. It's going to save, like, around 30 bank spaces for me.
Yep, there you go. And that's the key behind it. So basically how this will work is you can talk to any of the loyalty contacts and they'll provide you an aura bag, and then you'll be able to equip the aura bag. Unfortunately, you won't be able to use the auras from the aura bag. You'll still have to withdraw them from it. But after you're done, you can put it back in the bag, and the aura bag will be a pocket item slot. So, I mean, it's definitely something that Jagex.
You can officially walk around with all of your auras if you want.
Yeah,
but that's what I don't understand. Like, why make it for the pocket slot if you can't turn them on from in the bag?
Technical limitation.
I mean, okay, but what's the point of walking around with an aura bag? You just need it sitting in the bank, right?
Yeah, I guess. And within that aura bag, you'll also be able to search. You'll filter by owned, unowned, various other categories as well. So favorites. So this is, I think, what people have wanted for a long time. So this will be great to see. Filter by skilling, combat, etc. But
perfect.
Also, Very cool. Also coming this month in terms of ninja updates, prayer presets. You'll have up to 10 prayer presets that use the built-in prayer functionality in-game. You'll be able to basically save multiple different prayers and say, I want this, this, and this on. And you can put each of the different presets on your action bar if you so desire.
Oh,
so
that's great. That's
yes.
It.
Yes.
I was like, if they don't say that you can put it onto your action bar, it's worthless.
Exactly.
I figured you'd be able to do that. And this is one of Jagex's sneaky little, for me, it's an accessibility update. I guess it's just quality of life for a lot of people. But this matters a lot for me, because I can put my, you know, my quick prayers on my action bar and I can put that to a hotkey. But if I have to switch, and some of the bosses, you know, you've got to switch your protect melee to protect range or what have you. Now, I could put those on my action bar, but that takes an ability spot. So I have to balance that out. You know what I mean? So like, if I want to have all three protects, the best I can do is it's going to take three spots. And that's including like, you know, my quick prayer still I have set, so I could have it like item protect, a overhead prayer. So like, say it's protect from melee, and then I could have a turmoil or something like that going, but I still need two more slots if I need to switch to protect from mage or protect from range.
Yeah.
With this, that cuts it down to two. That's big. And I mean, if I wanted to use three, it just gives me so many more options, because otherwise I have to click on the prayers, and that is so hard to do for me when I'm fighting. Like, this is really, really good.
Yeah. Another great thing that this will enable you to do is that if you want to have a prayer preset that utilizes the old spell book or the old prayer book, you can do that, but you'll still need to manually swap your book over. But you can basically set all of these up just on the interface and have that with you right there.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah. And it's going to be able to use all the preset names that banks can do and whatnot. So really great work here.
Yeah, I was shocked. I couldn't believe it. And I was just like, wow, this is just so good. Like, because I just went to Calfight King last week or week before. And I don't do much of that, but I did a little bit in you know, you got some prayer switching there, and I was having that trouble because you need your abilities. You can't take up too many spots with the prayers, right. You know? So like, this is really good. I'm really, really happy about it.
All right. And also, of course, the blood dies and whatnot, and shadow dies and barrows dies for the tier 92 weapons. Those will come in a similar ninja patch at this point. For those of you guys who are interested in Fashionscape and whatnot and have the money to, first of all, purchase a tier 92 weapon, and secondly, purchase one of these dies to use for it. So,
also, yeah, those might be more expensive than the weapon.
Yeah, most definitely. So, who knows? But anyways, as we also mentioned, we got the Beach coming this month and the Magister. So, but with that, there were also some other interesting tidbits that came out of this stream, including the fact that Mod Osborne admitted on this show that the reputation system was, quote-unquote, jealously keeping people in Menaphos and was too much and perhaps skewed a bit towards cosmetics rather than tangible items,
mm-hmm.
rather than being rewarding enough. So once again, they know this just like they know the achievement system was messed up. And I feel like, you know, with Mod Osborne taking that and mentioning this, we will be unlikely to see similar mix-ups like this in the future. Now, Tanis, I know you were saying Mod Osborne was hard on himself. Was it for this, or was it also for something else in general that you wanted to highlight?
Well, I mean, no, it was for that, but he also he had mentioned, like, there's a question about what's your opinion of the year of surprises, you know, and he was saying, well, we've let too much stuff kind of slip, and other stuff has been data mined, but the surprises that we were able to keep under wraps were, you know, were good. Like, they were really happy about the Menafall stuff that they were able to keep under wraps, but I don't know. I mean, Mod Osborne's pretty transparent, I think, when he does streams. you could just tell. I don't know if it's this the first full year where he's in that spot that he is in now, where
I think he's kind of been.
And I feel like he takes it very personally, and that's just my impression. That's the way I could see him and the way he was talking and
well, I think he really, really cares about his job and he cares about the community. Yes. Like, you have to give him props. He is in a job that he loves and you can tell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I totally agree. And that's why I think we're, I've always kind of liked Mod Osborne, but I think we're in real good hands because I don't know if that would have been addressed in the past. Mainstream's not been known for admitting, oh, we messed up. They kind of just don't say anything and maybe try to fix it, but they're not. Yeah, they don't come out and say we messed up.
This highlights another huge thing that I'd like to mention here. The community as a whole is sometimes to blame for the huge negative backlash that Jagex gets. When you put it this way, you see what Mod Osborne talks about, you see how Mod Osborne feels, you know that this is a big deal for Jagex, and it's not that the community or it's not that they're just, you know, writing these things off and are perfectly fine with the way things are going. They're always looking to make changes like this, and you can see the emotion in their faces that they want to do this. And I would say out there to the community members and the community in general that has a problem and likes to really go hard on Jagex for these kind of mistakes, that they're people too, and they wouldn't be doing this if they didn't like what they were doing. So I think more often than not, the community needs to give them the benefit of the doubt. And that's what I'd like to highlight going back to the achievement system, is that, yes, while we were hard on that update, I in my own self knew that eventually Jagex would come to fix this. So...
Well, and I think one thing that you've always done well, Shane, and I try to follow the example is very fair. Call things like we see it. And when they're good, we say it's good. And when it's bad, well, not only do we say it's bad, but we try to give suggestions to make it better. And I think that's the difference between just the trolls out there, and you know what I mean.
And this goes to my internal slogan for RSBNB update, which I won't say, but you guys just described it accurately. And I think if you use a few words, you can come up with what I try and go through daily on the show or weekly on the show, and when I'm producing the show. But, anyways. That is what we can look forward to in July. Anything else on this before we move along?
Did you mention the expansion stuff?
Oh, no, I didn't. Thank you for reminding me. Also in this, they touched on expansions and what the future of expansions will consist of. And they said that they don't necessarily need to cover a large area of the game like Menaphos or Prif, but instead could have a huge impact on the game like a potential skill work might. And there we go. That's
or
kind
multiple
of...
skills. Did you hear that little?
Yes.
What's that? What do you think that is, Shane?
Well, I think we're going to be seeing multiple skills in with the next expansion with the mining and – or not, sorry. Not the mining and, eventually the mining and smithing rework. Eventually, not yet. But with the invention skill rework, I think we're going to see another skill reworked with that.
I think we're going to see construction.
Oh, well, that would be.
It's time. Be I called it. I'm calling it.
But
I think
you really think they could keep that under wraps to do a massive construction rework?
Yes.
And not consult us?
Yes.
They should, because look what happens when they did consult us. I mean, I love the aquarium, but come on, we got an aquarium. Maybe consulting us wasn't a good idea.
They kind of did consult us by giving us like. A tiny little teaser back at a RuneFest a year or two ago. So they're working off that information. It's coming.
That would be cool. That would be so cool. But I really feel like it's going to be 120 mining and smithing. So strap on, boys. We're going for a ride.
Well, yeah, I could see that too. But it's just like, the entire construction rework is just graphically update it and then add a 120 personal slayer dungeon teleport for the teleport room.
Cool.
They could do so much with the POH. Especially if you have player own ports, the player own Slayer dungeon, and all these other things, you can start to integrate that a little bit.
And it's the year of bringing, or well, not the year, but the last couple years of making stuff from 2005 like current and, you know, important again, right? With our, we got Prif, we got Minifalls, we got ties up with all these quest lines. Why not make construction relevant? Bring our PLH, make it relevant.
Make skilling great again.
You know, that'd be so great. We could do all kinds of fun stuff. We could make videos of like RuneScape cribs.
And also in this, they said that, you know, they will be talking about the next few years of skilling at RuneFest in the live stream. So it's safe to say skilling is on the agenda and we'll get some focus somewhere along the lines in one of these expansions. Yeah. So.
We are getting ready for a bombshell at RuneFest this year.
You think?
Yes.
I think we're going to see that in the next few weeks, actually. They did say that something large was going to be announced in July, so we'll have to wait and see.
I think that they're going to tell us what the next expansion is, and I think it's going to be the bank.
It's either going to be the bank or I hope it's not the weather system. So many people are talking that one up, and I think it'd be cool, but it's not an expansion.
No.
Well, we can talk more about expansions later. We do have a couple of questions related to them. So, one more thing about July behind the scenes. They did say that anima rates will be tweaked at some point to aim for 2 hours. Spend 2 hours in Shattered Worlds scanning ability.
Yeah, if they're tweaking rep, they're tweaking anima rates. So
yeah, which is good because I still like that.
I like it too, and it's just not worth the time investment the way it is right now. And they heard that. They said they heard that from everywhere, so I'm thinking they probably heard us as well. But all right,
we're the last people they check.
Not necessarily.
No. There's still you still got some you still got some old school boys there.
All right. So this week's Treasure Hunter promotion is the Summer Sizzler, where you can get bright stars and bright lamps that give additional bonus XP and experience. They give 70% more XP. 70%. Runs from the 28th to July 3rd. So,
you know, I'm not going to beat this dead horse because it's dead and it stinks.
And,
so I ain't
going to
beat it.
This is a perfectly fine thing. If people want to spend money to support RuneScape, I'm fine with that.
Yeah,
and we all have our own achievements. We have our own high scores and whatnot. It's no big deal.
You know, it's funny. Like, if you were to go back like 4 years or so, this would just be the end of the world. But it just goes to show that incremental changes really change people's minds.
Yeah,
make things more acceptable. Yeah.
That's how I would have released EOC. But anyways, that's a topic for another show. We're going to move on to questions right now, and the first one's an audio
those worms
question.
Back in that can first.
Yeah, first one's an audio question from Parnassius.
G'day guys, Parnassius here. With the announcement that ModTimbo is looking at rebalancing the drop tables for Slayer and boss creatures, do you think this would be a good time to give it a total overhaul? Imagine if Slayer creatures only drop their unique items. Regular drops could be worked out as to what they make on average per hour, and the Slayer masters would then pay you a bounty for the task instead of herbs and logs and other skilling items being dropped. They could also introduce Slayer shops, whereby players could purchase the items that used to be dropped. This would allow Jagex to set a standard price for herbs, seeds, and the like. Imagine seeing Torsels at 25k in the store, Lantadimes and Dwarfweeds at 18 or 20k again. While this wouldn't be a short-term fix, long-term I think it would be healthy for skillers, especially if they allow the trading of the original Extreme and Overload potions. Would love to hear your thoughts and discussion on this idea, and what personally you would like to see in the drop table rework. Happy RuneScaping to all, and thanks again for the great podcast.
I feel this could be an expansion in itself, but I'll start because I need to get this out and say that first and foremost, no primary ingredients should be dropped from Slayer. No wood, no ore, no herbs. no fish. Skiller should be left to provide those. I think that should be issue number one and the first and foremost thing that goes into with any kind of Slayer master drop table rework. Now, I also think that Parnassus' idea is great when it comes to a bounty or maybe some kind of way that you can get paid for the Slayer task up front, though I don't think it should be outright GP that you get paid. I think it should be some other form of currency where maybe you can buy something that would be useful to Slayer, though we already have that with Slayer points, so it might have to be some kind of currency that would let you purchase those herbs maybe. So...
Or they do something completely different with Slayer points.
Or there you go. So, because
they're not that useful.
Yeah,
I mean, right now we needed them for these containers and stuff.
Yeah, but... we just need them for that. That literally is what Slayer points are for now.
And once you have unlocked everything, you don't really need more of them. And I feel that if you look at the Slayer point menu, there's a rift between equipment that you can purchase and tools that you can purchase and unlocks for your equipment that you can purchase versus the things you can do with your Slayer Master, like canceling tasks, preferring tasks, that kind of thing. So maybe keep the Slayer points for canceling tasks, preferring tasks, and the Slayer Master management, let's say. And then on the other side, you could have this new currency where you purchase Slayer helmets or you purchase the herbs and whatnot. So that would be good. And I think if you're going to do that, having the ability to purchase the herbs would be good, but you also need to allow people the ability to sell these herbs, sell these potions to the Slayer Master guy. Because if you think about it, back in the day, what was the first way that you made money on RuneScape? It was by selling stuff to a general store or a mining and smithing shop, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's like Iron Man style. I don't know.
I'm not saying that would be the only way to sell your herbs and whatnot, but it might be more economical for someone who does a lot of Slayer to buy their herbs and whatnot with some of the points. Granted, it wouldn't be the main way of purchasing, but it would be an option of something you could do on both the buyer and seller side of it to offset what happens when you remove these from the drop tables.
That's, yeah. See, and I'm kind of on the fence because, and like, ideally, I love it. I love when he suggested it a couple weeks ago. I was like, yes, that would be great, and I still believe it would be great. My only concern is, are there enough skillers to keep it going? And that's what I'm unsure about. Or will bots just come in and fill in the gap?
No, I think there will be once.
Oh, yeah. Would be because you have people out
would
there.
Just be there now.
Yeah.
And see, that would be right. Great. And I want to see, like, so if that's going to be the case, great. See, I differ a little bit with Shane here because I think you could just drop GP. I don't think it's going to hurt anything. I really don't. I don't think it's that much GP, and it all balances out. I don't know if a Slayer shop like that. I don't think that's enticing enough. Slayer is the main way to make money, and so you're just reconfiguring like a huge part of the economy.
You're turning Slayer into a dungeoneering reward system, in my opinion.
Yeah, that would actually be a way of
I don't want to do that.
You complete a floor, you get a certain amount of tokens or bounty, and then you buy stuff with that that's useful outside of
that. That will kill Slayer. That will kill Slayer.
That would kill Slayer. And here's my opinion.
Why is that?
I think that...
Actually, I just want to say something that might change your opinion before this. There would be a huge drive to populate this store from the skiller side because you have lots of people out there, like myself included, who don't make the high-end overload potions because they're not tradable. And we have this huge stack sitting there that we can't use. So if we could sell them to the Slayer guy and sell it to people who are actually going to use them, it would provide us a reason to train with that, and it would keep that populated.
Well, You see, that's another thing that didn't sway my mind at all, because as someone who's into combat, I wanted to get a high level herbalar level so I could make those extremes for myself. I don't want those traded because I earned that and I want to use them for myself. And I feel like I might be taking the unpopular side, but I feel at the same time that a lot of people that are into combat can understand this. Can you imagine how boring doing task after task would be if you can't get a rare drop, if you don't get a normal set of drops?
Oh, no, you would still get those.
Every task.
You would just get not the raw materials. I don't think it was in the
spec. That's fine if you don't get the raw materials.
I don't think it was in the spec to remove all drops.
How many drops are there other than the raw materials? Because you can argue that a lot of things are raw materials.
But it's hurting the economy. It is hurting the economy. You cannot have those dropped in the sheer numbers that they are, because what point is there for someone to go mining, sell them on the exchange, or use their own ore when they can just go fight aviancies for that adamantite ore?
Yeah, you're right there, Shane. But I think Bistro has a point too, to where like if I was talking about making overloads tradable or untradable, I would probably make the extremes tradable. Keep overloads where they are, but make the extremes tradable. I think that'd be a good balance, because the extremes you could, you know, that's a good compromise there.
Yeah, I could compromise with that too. I mean, that's hard, but I could do it.
Yeah, I mean, you would still, to get the best of the best, you would have to.
And combination potions could still, the prif combinations could still maintain untradeable.
But material wise, I want Slayer to be able to make money. I just don't think there's enough. If we're talking like a Dungeoneering type of table, I ain't doing Slayer. There's just nothing in it for me. I just wouldn't care.
They would have to find something else for it, because, I mean, we know it's an issue. Modtimbo has highlighted it, and it's been talked about before. So we know it's in the minds of Jagex that they want to do this, and we know it's an issue. So it has to happen at some point.
Well, no, and it should happen when it comes to the raw materials, but give me money. I want to be able to buy what I want to buy. I don't want to be stuck with the only – I'm doing Slayer for herbs. Man, piss on that. I want to buy what I want to buy.
I would say the best compromise for this would be to not remove all of those drops that you guys are talking about, but to reduce them.
No, they got to go.
No, I can't agree with that. I think they just got to reduce them. I mean, they can drastically reduce them, but they still got to be there. And the reason I say that is because, as a player who did or was working to 99 Slayer, and there was still like torsal seeds drops, that would be awesome. When I would do a task and I get a torsal seed drop, that would like help the rest of the task go by. And I like that. I like getting some random thing. You price check it and it's worth something nice. And you're like, well, that's cool. Like if it's just cash all the time, it's just like, oh, more cash, more cash, more cash. And I can't have as much enjoyment out of that. I think there still needs to be those basic resources, but it just doesn't need be at such a higher
rate. Well, here's what
that
you do instead. You remove the basic resources from those skills from the Slayer drop table, and instead you make a new Slayer drop table that has a chance of dropping something that could be appealing to a combat type person. Now, it can't be something that takes away from the skilling side of it, but instead it needs to be something that makes your eye glitter and it likes with your little price checker thing that tells you how much it's worth.
I think, seeds actually would be good, right? Because there's not enough of them coming in anywhere else. Skillers can't just produce seeds. That's bird nest, you know?
And then another thing that I would say is that if there were to be different items coming in, I don't think that they should be necessarily Slayer related, but they should be Skiller related for Slayers to sell.
How does
because
that
that's
make
what
sense?
Slayers want to do. They want to
How
sell.
How does that make mm-hmm. sense?
Skillers would want to buy. Do Skillers want to buy a whole bunch of Slayer stuff?
But why should a Skiller need to buy from a Slayer person and vice versa? That makes zero sense.
No, it makes sense if you think of Slayer drops giving optimized Skiller boosts that can only be given from PVM people. Just as PVM people seem to only be giving people that want to do like herb lore and stuff herbs, or miners the coal and the ore that they need. It's a one-sided thing, and I don't think anyone's looked at the idea of if it was to go the other way a little bit.
Fair point. I like this. We have three distinct approaches. This is kind of cool.
I'm just a little confused as to where that comes from and what the logic is behind that.
Okay, let's say there's a Slayer creature like Aberrant Spectres or something. They drop something that Slayers can get that you can add to a super compost and make something a little bit better that increases yield slightly, or you know, the things like that. Things that
all right.
slightly increase a Skiller's motivation
now,
to keep skilling
now a
those
counterpoint
items.
To that.
And that would replace the high amount of regular resources and bring that number down, but not completely remove it.
All right, now a counterpoint to that. What if I took a dragon longsword and made a level 70 Slayer creature drop an item that could bring your dragon longsword up to level 70, and then make the level 80 Slayer creatures drop something that brings it up to 80 and have it cap off around tier 85 or maybe tier 83 or so. So it's kind of the same thing, except working in the same wheelhouse. Except
I can solve this.
Except where we instead are enhancing gear that is already in game for combat folks. Same thing would go for a new set of boss armor drop. You might get the raw material from the, let's just say hypothetically, I know this isn't going to happen, let's just say hypothetically that when the Magister came out, it dropped a piece of chunk of metal and you had to forge it into something to be the tier 92 sword with a high level of smithing. Would that also be acceptable?
That would be, I think that's the only way to make what you're talking about even remotely.
Yeah, it needs to stick with the combat type of stuff. It can't go
but here's,
across like that.
I mean, here's kind of the counter, though, that I would worry about. Like, once you get your routine in combat, I mean, it's no different than for a Skiller. Once you have your routine down and you have your equipment, I mean, you're not looking to upgrade all the time. You're not looking – like, if you're in level mid-80
– Oh, and to be clear, you
gear,
would be able to sell those things, I suggested.
You're not upgrading.
You would be able to sell those.
But to who? Because you're selling them to other Slayers who don't need to upgrade.
No, I'm sure you could find people who would upgrade. There's lots of accounts coming up that could use that.
I don't know.
Are there, though?
I think there are.
I wrote an article this month talking about how people are very centered around their own kind of skill level, whether it is low level, mid level, or high level, and how everything needs to be tailored to them. And it's just because everything has been tailored to high level that we seem to be losing a lot of that low level community. Low level also includes non-members. I need to say that.
Yeah.
It's not to be offensive.
It does.
But it does. And, you know, high level people like do combat, but they could be doing skilling as well. And I think that if we are starting to move towards a direction of 120s, that will help. And if we like get a good balance of skilling and Slayer items that work together to create something and create value for one to the other, where it balances things, that's good. But I don't think that the solution is completely removing items from a drop table. That would be like,
I think you're just looking out for yourself here.
It doesn't make sense to me.
Because what you've said so far doesn't make sense.
How does it make sense?
It doesn't make sense because what you're proposing is exactly the same thing, except opposite to benefit you even more. It's the exact same thing, except it benefits you even more.
How does it benefit me more?
Because rather than selling something that a skiller can purchase and maybe get elsewhere, you are in turn doing something with Slayer that can only come from Slayer, and you are holding that enhancement, you the Slayer, to someone else who is a skiller. So rather than fixing the problem, it further exacerbates the problem.
Okay. What if a Slayer task gave you a drop of something that was mainly Slayer but could be obtained from skillers as well, just not in highest quantity, like it is in reverse order right now?
If it could be made using a skill as well, then yes, that would be fine.
Okay. So from what I'm coming from, it seems like the happy medium is that slayers can continue to slay, get items maybe at for those main resources at a lower amount, and get those other resources at like an amount to account for the loss of those items, but skillers should have the ability to get a little bit of it too. Because skillers, they offer a lot that people need for Slayer, and if you're going to take away stuff from Slayer, but not completely take it away, it makes sense that they should start to equal out a little bit more. Because both people will be producing it, one at a higher rate for certain things that Slayers want, and one thing at a higher rate for what skillers want in the corresponding different playstyles.
Well, that does sound like a decent medium that we could go with, but I don't think we have the data to determine what that medium would be, and if they need to be removed completely, if that's what the data suggests, then that's what should happen. But I think you have now successfully argued a point that if there was a happy medium somewhere in between, that might be more palatable to folks like yourself.
Yeah, I'm just saying that it is a bad idea. And Tana said, like, if they were to go a route of putting those items into something like a dungeoneering reward system where you just get a certain amount of points or coins and then you can buy it with your bounty as a reward shop, it's not rewarding. It's a task within a task.
All right. Well, we're going back to the beginning. So, Tanis, unless you have anything else to end this with, I'm going to move on to the next question.
No, I'm just going to say, show me the money. That's all I care about. Show me
all
the money.
All righty.
That's what I want.
Well, this next one comes from Sirion, and he says, looking at past large updates like Dungeoneering, the evolution of combat, Priftiness, the Ark, and maybe even all of player-owned ports together, what do you think would have been different about them had they been expansions? Do you think we would have had different types of content in the game had the expansions been around longer? All right. Well, first and foremost, I think that any major skill that comes out could be filled as an expansion, and it would have to be released all at once. That's how Dungeoneering would have looked when it came out.
That's how they should have been, too.
Yeah.
When these skills came out, that's how it should have been.
Shane, you actually said something nice about Dungeoneering.
I did. You listened last week, right?
I heard it, and I was just like, there's no way I'm not going to let that just go.
Well, so it was basically a a middle-of-the-podcast realization that Dungeoneering was more of an expansion than Menaphos because of what it featured. But in terms of EOC, I think I don't know how you'd make EOC an expansion. It would have to have the foresight of releasing it exactly how it is now, or mostly how it is now at the very beginning. But as we all know, that wasn't possible.
Different patches of abilities that are at the same number for each skill.
Yes.
Are balanced.
Right.
And tried and tested.
Yeah. But, you know, the thing is we couldn't get official testing done with EOC because there was so much community hate about the idea going on that it was hard to accomplish anything decent.
Well, and the beta test was worthless anyway. People just got wonderful gear that they'll never be able to use. It was just, the whole thing was stupid. But I think that is an example of what an expansion, like, all of those examples are what expansions could and should be. It's just that it took years to get them right. But if you could have gotten them right and added all of the stuff that we have now as they are now, that would be lovely. I mean, look how many times we've added the ports. When ports first came out, it was a little bare.
That would have been huge. But, if ports came out in its own. But I also think that we saw so much ports development because people liked it and Jagex didn't know how insanely popular it would be.
Right, but that's where they need to take a page or some advice from Shane and just be courageous, be brave.
When it comes to ports, I feel if they were to make an expansion like that, you're treading on dangerous water. And I only have to say that.
I like that.
I only say that because World of Warcraft tried to do that. And it didn't go well at all. So I know they're two different games, but that is the same concept. So you gotta be a little bit careful with doing something where it's just you do it once a day. You can't make that. That's it for the expansion. That would be dangerous.
Well, no, I mean, it needs everything it has now. That's what I mean. It's because now there's a lot more than just the once a day. Maybe even, you know what? How about this? I would have thrown in both batches of the Ark together with ports. It would have been a big-ass expansion, but it would have been pretty cool. And you would have
that
would have
been cool.
You know, that would have alleviated what you're talking about, Bistro, and you would have a good variety. And it's all related. You know, it's all related content.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that would have fixed the Ark because the Ark wouldn't have felt like an afterthought.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to Prif, I think we got the content we need in Prif. It just needed to be grouped into one update and
done. Yep.
Same goes for invention and even divination, because
that should have been as one as well. You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It should have been. And I can't imagine how they could have messed up invention.
And I think if we would have had them both come at the same time, we would have seen a tighter integration between the two. And ultimately what that means is we would have seen invention have more of a major role in the game than it has now compared to what we're waiting for.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, if they were bundled together, could you imagine the shell shock of how different the playstyle would be?
Can you imagine how long it would take to get my max cape back? Oh, that would suck.
All right. So I think what we're seeing here is that if Jagex wanted to, the expansion model could be applied to many different updates that have come out in the past. And, you know, I think the big question at the end of the day is that we look and we see we got most of the content that's already there, and it would have just come out quicker and perhaps been a little bit more tailored and a little bit more refined than it was initially. And the big question is Menaphos still an expansion?
Yes.
It will be if they're – I mean, it depends on how much stuff they add to it, because I'm still in the place where if what we have is what we have, then that's definitely an expansion. If you keep adding to it, it makes it harder. That's not really what I see as an expansion if you keep adding to something.
I think their intention was to get that boss out.
And, within 2 weeks, and it just didn't polish. Happen. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree.
And I'm not holding Magister. And
I mean,
them, really.
You know, based on the release schedule we have for July, it certainly looks like they are holding to the idea of release everything at once, spend 3 months discovering it and move on kind of thing. So. Mm-hmm. All right. But yeah, definitely. We would have had a few different things and they would have had maybe a little bit more refined content in terms of this. And I think the game would have got bigger faster than it did.
Yeah, and it seems like with expansions, when they drop one now, and people are just up in arms about it, because they're up in arms about everything all the time now, that JX has that buffer room to do those tweaks. Like, the development's done. The big stuff is out. Now they tweak it to what people want. I mean, it's kind of a bad, like, philosophy, but it still leads to better content.
All right. Fair enough.
Yeah. Sure.
Thank you, Sirion. Next one is from Tyler. You guys can answer this, seeing as I've never read the books and I've only seen two of the movies. What is your favorite Harry Potter book and movie?
Oh, okay.
My favorite book is The Half-Blood Prince. And as for my favorite movie...
first one?
I'd probably have to say Half-Blood Prince too. Either that or The Sorcerer's Stone.
All right.
All right. For me, I would say that my favorite book is probably I don't know the name. It's the last book was my favorite book. And
The Deathly Hallows.
There we go. Yes, that was cool. I'm going to agree with you, Beaster, though, for the movie. I'm going to go with Half-Blood Prince, too. That was a really good movie. And I haven't seen the last movie, so, I mean, there's that. But, yeah, I like that.
All righty. Thank you, everyone, for the questions. Sounds good. If you want to send more in for next week, that's update.rsbnb.com/ask. Or call or text 571-57-BNB, 571-572-2632. And these two will be here again next week to discuss the Magister. Mm-hmm. We have managed to hold them over into July for that. All right. So moving on to tech news. This first one is Google has been hit with a record fine in the EU over what they feel as a shopping antitrust complaint. So the story goes as follows. Google was fined 2.42 billion euros, which is roughly $2.7 billion by the European Commission, after it ruled the company had abused its power by promoting its own shopping comparison service at the top of various search results. You guys might be familiar with this, that when you go shopping on Google, it offers you some options of items that are similar to what you're searching for and provides stores where you might be able to find these. So, the ruling.
I find this hilarious. Yeah. But continue, and yeah. I'll get into a mini rant after it.
Yeah. The ruling also orders Google to end its anti-competitive practices within 90 days or face a further penalty. Google said it may appeal this. If it fails to change the way it operates, Google could potentially be charged and forced to make payments of 5% of its parent company's Alphabet average daily worldwide earnings, and that makes roughly $14 million a day. So, what Google has done is illegal under EU antitrust rules, said Margrethe Vestager, the European Union's Competition Commissioner, it has denied other companies the chance to compete on their merits and to innovate, and most importantly, it has denied the European customers the benefit of competition, genuine choice, and innovation. Google, in response, says that we believe the European Commission's online shopping decision underestimates the value of those kinds of fast and easy connections. While some comparison shopping sites naturally want Google to show them more prominently, our data shows that people prefer links take them directly to the products they want and not to websites where they have to repeat their searches. We think our current shopping results are useful and a much improved version of the text-only ads we showed a decade ago. Showing ads that include picture, rating, prices benefits us, our advertisers, and most of all our users, and we show them only when our feedback tells us that they are relevant to you. So basically the idea here is that if you're searching for a comparison between various items and you want to maybe use a comparison site, the EU feels it is anti-competitive for Google to be suggesting stores where you might just go and purchase the various items instead of going to one of these subsites. And, you know, I think what we're seeing here is a classic overreach of what the EU feels as acceptable, because if you're searching for a cuddly toy, as the example goes in the BBC story, do you really want to have to go to a toy store to search for that and do a comparison of maybe five or four different toy stores? Or would you rather just see the results right on Google and go to one of the stores and pick it up right there? Why would you guys rather do? Would you rather use a third-party search option that compares them, or would you rather just search from directly within Google?
Obviously first.
Right.
I don't really. So what's the problem? They're only showing the picture and the direct result of someone that is a partner of theirs?
The problem is, here's is that the problem. They're showing.
The problem is,
okay,
that
explain it.
One company, I'm sorry, I can't hold back any longer. The problem is one company doesn't have enough money to put into SEO, which stands for search engine optimization. It's something I work with as a web developer every day. Everything counts. Google is the, like, they control the internet.
It's also worth noting now that some of these are sponsored ads.
Yeah. So search engine optimization. If you adhere to what Google wants, you're going to appear higher and higher up on their search results. When they are depicting what stuff is available at the top of their search, it's for people that have done good search optimization, are using Google AdSense, are using just a whole bunch of their stuff, which makes sense. They're a company. Google AdSense is a part of them. It's how they make a bunch of money. And it's, you know, it's not their fault that they're the biggest search engine. They just got better stuff for it. And, you know, Google is, it's growing as a big bad guy to me, but I don't think they're in the wrong because they're just big.
No, of course not. And like I've said before on the show, Google is one of the most honest corporate entities that you can find today. And that's evident by, you know, a various number of things. If you click on the main grid, there's now the My Account profile I featured about a month or so ago in a pick of the week. There's also the news over the last week that Google is going to stop looking at Gmail to determine what kind of ads to serve people if they don't want to do that. So Google isn't a bad guy. And I mean, even going back to last week's tech news about Google and YouTube filtering for terrorist content. So,
like, they literally deserve this title, the gatekeepers of the internet, because they are in charge of how so much is done, and because of how important it is for your stuff to come up on Google as a company, you know, you need to adhere to some of that. You can't be found anywhere if you don't.
Yeah.
And
I think,
you know, it's a dangerous precedent to set. But Google does it at least, from what we know, a pretty fair standpoint.
Yeah. And, you know, there's also a very interesting wording in the regulation. And they say it's accusing Google of distorting the market. And, you know, that just shows that the EU Commission here doesn't really understand what Google is doing. Because they're not distorting their market. They're not choosing winners. They are offering up in the sponsored selection here, as shown in the screenshot on the story, they're offering people who pay for an ad for their company the ability to appear top in Google. And like Mr. Bistro said, anyone else below that is free to read what Google looks at for determining about where their story is going to appear. So... I think Google is in the right on this, and you know, we'll have to see what happens with this. But it's a dangerous precedent by the EU, not only for the EU, but also for other countries should they want to ever do anything like this.
Yeah. If Google's going to fight this, I can't think of any situation where the EU is going to pull out of it. Like, Google is in the right. I think a lot of tech people know that. And when it comes to this kind of situation, if they understand that, that's all that's really going to matter. Like, because Google, if they have to defend themselves, they will, and it will make sense to anybody that has just the smallest idea of what ads are on the internet in general.
Yep.
I guess I have to just do a quick devil's advocate here, because I think we get, at least it feels to me, and I don't have the tech background that you guys have, so I mean, that's one thing right there, but because it's Google and they have such a, you know, they're pretty decent as for giant corporations go, we kind of seem to give them the benefit of the doubt. But I wonder if we would have the same opinion if it was a different company, because I think the way that I'm understanding what they're doing or what the EU is saying is essentially you're going to use Google. If you're searching for something, it's going to be Google. You're not going to Bing. Come on. Sorry, Microsoft. You're not going to Bing. It ain't happening. You're going to Google, and therefore, it is skewing towards that. Now, from a business standpoint, of course you're going to promote your own stuff. But I don't know. Like, if it was anyone else than Google, would we feel the same way? Because I'm very much in favor of strong antitrust.
Oh, yeah. Me too. And I think they're wrong in this case. I think if you were to maybe look at Facebook, for example, and say that Facebook had a monopoly in social, then you might be able to find some kind of antitrust thing. So, I mean,
but if they have it in social, how does Google not have it in? Like,
well, you gotta be.
And they do.
You gotta be really careful when you say that Facebook doesn't have a mark where Google's doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Because in the background, Facebook is huge in ads, and they are just as important in Google when it comes to advertising, if not more so. It's pretty incredible. I don't want to go into too much about all the things that as a web developer has to worry about or do for marketing people and their companies. But if it's not Google, it's Facebook. And if it's not Facebook, then it gets down to the smaller ones. We got Bing, Yahoo, and, you know, just the smaller advertising names. But Facebook and Google are the big boys. And, you know, they're you could argue that the EU should be doing the same thing for Facebook.
But yeah, and I would be totally in favor of that. I'm very wary of something getting too large like that. And it feels to me like in practice, they are what you are going to use to search. Like when it all comes down to it, you can tell me that there's some rinky dink search engine out there that ain't nobody going to use. And that is not real competition. Yeah, there you go. You know
what? You deep web user.
I don't know. Just let me play the devil's advocate there, but I just, you know, that's I think what's interesting is that is something you only see in the EU, and we over here try to pride ourselves as being such, you know, free market people, and that's how you keep a market free is by making sure someone can't monopolize the whole damn thing.
Yeah, but at the same time, you know, I think there's a confusion here of what's going on between sponsored, not sponsored, and general SEO. So we'll have to see how it pans out. All right, next up, what was thought to be another ransomware attack turned out to be a wiper. So X-Peter, Petya, and NotPetya, otherwise known as also maybe in the news this week, GoldenEye, as another piece of ransomware malware, turns out that it's actually wiping a disk, even if a payment was made. So, it was not designed for financial gain. Instead, it was just designed to completely destroy people's hard drives if you get infected by this. The first infections of this appeared in Ukraine, which, you know, makes it a little bit suspicious that it could be state-sponsored. And some of the fingerprints on the code also look state-sponsored, so we'll have to see what comes from that. But that has been making the rounds this week, that this new piece of malware is wiping hard drives that it finds rather than just encrypting them. At this point, we don't know exactly what kind of systems are being targeted, but suffice to say, if you get hit with this, your computer is done. At least the hard drive storage is done on it.
And so, how would we protect ourselves from that, Shane?
Well, as much as I, you know, don't want to be an I told you so kind of person, you want to run the latest version of Windows, which means Windows 10. Make sure your Windows updates are set to automatically install. And even with that going forward, make sure that you're not opening strange attachments, clicking on strange links, going to websites that you don't want to go to, so on and so forth. So, yeah, there's a really bad thing creeping around the internet. So I figured I'd scare you guys all with this.
Well, more scary is how easily it can get worse. The idea of internet security is literally about time. Is it worth it to hack someone?
Yeah.
How much time?
And also, is it worth it
put up against the hacker?
Is it worth it to protect yourself against that? That's another question a lot of people ask themselves.
It comes about, you know, just being smart about backing up. Like,
yeah, because, you know, if you backed up, you would be able to just, you know, recover from this easily, reformat the drive and begin fresh. So providing your backup wasn't infected, but that's a whole other story. And, you know, Windows Defender does a real great job at protecting against these kind of things. I was doing some testing this past weekend of my hardware, and I had one of those, you know, all-in-one boot CDs around that had lots of tools on them. And it found something that it deemed as suspicious because, you know, those kind of tools sometimes need to get deep in the hardware and might have malicious fingerprints on them. So Defender found it, quarantined it, and asked me what I should do with it. So I'd rather have a false positive like that than have something that, you know, completely skirts my vision of what's going on. So this is floating around primarily in Eastern Europe. It hasn't made its way into any Western computer systems yet, but that's not to say that it couldn't. So basically what you want to do if you're running an older style Windows computer, get it off the internet.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
Well, Windows, that couldn't be more clear.
Yeah, Windows All XP right. needs to die.
No.
I got my Windows computer checking every night.
Yeah,
that's good. It does it every night.
All right.
Because I know that these can happen. They happen fast. It takes like no time for this to spread. And I just trust that Windows Defender is going to be on top of it. Because Windows, now that everyone's on basically the same thing, even though they pretty much released the next increment of Windows 10 recently, that they got a lot more people all on one thing that they need to protect.
Yeah. All right. Well, we do have some other security-related news this week. Intel's Skylake and Kaby Lake processors, which are the most recent ones and the last year's version, have a bug within the microcode of the CPU themselves.
That sounds good.
So, are you guys familiar with the technology of hyper-threading?
Yeah, that was one of the primary selling points of why I bought the processor
right.
I got.
Okay, so basically for listeners out there who aren't aware of what hyper-threading is inside each CPU that you have, there's a certain number of cores, physical computer cores. Most of us have quad-core CPUs today, so that's four physical cores that can do processing. Hyper-threading allows you to have two logical cores on each of these physical cores, bringing you up to 8 cores in total. And what Intel does with this technology is they accomplish it by essentially running what's called a second program counter on each of these cores inside your chip, and that lets two tasks be processed simultaneously or visual simultaneously, even though they're darting back and forth between actual attention of what's going on the CPU. So it was found out that there was a flaw in the microcode of the Kaby Lake and Skylake Intel processors that deal with hyperthreading. And when triggered, this defect can cause unpredictable system behavior. It could cause spurious errors such as application and system misbehavior, data corruption, and data loss. So, sounds pretty bad, right?
Yeah, why did it take so long to find that?
Oh, like, because it's really obscure. This is a really obscure bug. So
it's not happening to too many people.
Yeah, it's not happening to too many people. But basically, when there was a short loop, that is a short sequence of instructions that is recounted and repeated using various registers inside the CPU, and it was being utilized by hyperthreading at the same time, there was some overlap between what was happening. And anything that was in use here could potentially have their instructions essentially overlap. And it's to be noted that this can only happen when both the logical processors on the same physical core are active, so hence why it's a hyperthreading issue. And basically what this means is that the data could intersperse, and that's why you could get this errors and the system crashes and the potential data loss. So Intel is working on a fix. It'll be shipped out, of course, through Apple updates, Microsoft updates, Linux kernel updates, because everyone uses Intel chips these days. You're not likely to see anything like this weaponized, but nonetheless, I wanted to highlight this as a piece of tech news to show how deep and low-level system vulnerabilities can go in a modern computer.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Have they checked the new series that's supposed to come out with the A core and all of that? It's hyper-threaded too?
Well, they're a completely different microarchitecture design, so okay. It's likely that the problem won't exist there. So, but okay. Even if it does, they'll know where to look and know how to ship the update for it.
Okay.
No. For wow. Those
so is AMD licking their chops?
Well, no. AMD
might get
no.
in or something? No.
No, AMD wouldn't be doing that. AMD is so far back in the processor race that this doesn't really, it's not really a consequence to them. But
yeah. There is Intel.
There is Intel if you want to do main stage processing work. But for those of you guys who have a technical background or are just interested in seeing what's going on here, I have included a link to the initial Debian mailing list bug posting that had this posted. And I'll just read out what the exact problem is.
That's where it was found?
Yeah, it was found in Debian.
Wow.
Because these people were, let's see, what was the exact language they were working on? Where is it?
They just stumbled upon it when they were moving around in their Linux.
Yeah, they were using, they were using some form of they were using some scientific computing language that was dealing with hyperthreading, and it was producing erroneous values, so much so that they had to go debug their entire program and realize that it wasn't them, it was Intel that was causing this.
That is really curious.
It was OCaml toolchain that it was.
The thing that concerns me is that you said it's the Debian community. And
yeah, that's where they found it.
I got stake in Debian.
but I'll just read this out before we move on for those of you guys out there who are listening. If you have an interest in this, if you understand it, great. If not, then feel free to gloss over it. But the problem is described as under complex microarchitectural conditions, short loops of less than 64 instructions that use the AH, BH, CH, and DH registers, as well as their corresponding wider registers, RAX, EAX, AX, or AH, may experience unpredictable system behavior. This can only happen when both logical processes on the same processor are active. So whenever there was a small set of instructions interacting with these registers, there was a chance that the hyperthreading technology in these chips good overlap data.
Yeah, and that is serious when it's that low of a thing.
Yep.
especially because, like, these are used for anything from e-commerce sites to
yeah. It also affected the server
databases,
server-side Xeon chips as well.
Yeah.
But anyways, there's just a little bit of hardware knowledge for you guys and show you how deep these problems can go sometimes. All right, so our skill of the month update. Slayer skill of the month is progressing on. We got the Lion 777 in first place with 19.3 million XP gained. Tanis, you're currently in second place with 14.7. And Thieves is catching up to you, Tanis, with 14.1 million XP gained. And in fourth place, we have Parnassius, who's been maintaining a linear trajectory. So, you think he's going to take second from you?
Likely. man, this is not a sprint. It is a marathon. And I sorely underestimated the endurance it takes for a skill of the month. I will say that. And then the Steam Summer Sale came, and yeah, so I'm still kicking, but yeah, we'll see.
All right, and by the time you guys are listening to this, it will be the July Magic Skill of the Month, so it'll be interesting to see what exactly goes on with that. All right, we're going to move on to Achievements of the Week, and I will take the first three of them through the 26th. So we got Soul Quest with 99 Invention on the 28th, then Karen Angel with 99 Construction on the 26th, and then Fields of Hope also on the 26th with 120 Invention. All nice. Right.
We got Chodo 3000 with 99 Thieving on June 25th. Keef with 120 Range on June 24th. And Ariant with 99 Crafting on June 23rd.
And on June 22nd, we have Maru with 99 Invention and Kiba Thief with 99 Crafting.
Right on. I like these achievements. Good job, everyone. Nice little calm week here on the Achievements of the Week.
Yeah, congratulations.
Too many and some nice ones along the way. Mm-hmm. All right, so I believe you have a pick of the week for us, Mr. Beaster. What do you got?
I do. I think I might have brought in D&D to a pick of the week
in
the past.
Yeah, you did a few weeks ago.
But we are working with D&D 5th edition, and the campaign is the Curse of Strahd, which is a pre-written campaign. It takes place in Ravenloft, which, if Ravenloft sounds familiar to anyone who's played D&D, it is a D&D first edition pre-written campaign. So it has a lot of history to it, and it's one of the most favorite campaigns out there for Dungeons & Dragons. It's a gothic, vampiric-esque kind of story, and it is really cool, a lot of fun, really simple to learn. Easy to DM, and I'm going to be picking this up with my office at work over lunches, and I would highly recommend it. I've read through the campaign, and it's easy to pick up. It's very thematic, and I think it would be really enjoyable for anyone that wants something new for their D&D group.
All right. I'm not too much on the D&D and tabletop stuff, but I know that that seems to be making a resurgence today in today's world, eh? Or I don't know, maybe it never left.
I would love to play it, but unfortunately, I just don't have any friends that play it. I've always wanted to and just never had a chance. But, you know, I did pick up like a tabletop simulator. Is that something you can you play D&D?
Oh yeah, you can. You okay. Could definitely, and you can. I mean, it's quite extensive what you can do with that thing. It's just kind of hard sometimes to move the pieces around with a mouse, I find, and I don't know. I have mixed feelings about tabletop simulator. I haven't, but
Steam Cell.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. All right. Thank you, Mr. Bistro. I'm sure we'll have lots of fun with that. So what have we been doing? Let's start with you this week, Tanis.
I've been doing Slayer, but obviously not enough. Because I just not enough. But I've also been playing just everything that I went crazy buying on Friday. So
The Steam Summer Sale.
The Steam Sale. It sunk its claws in, and it got me. But it's been fun. A little jewel that I did pick up was that Ultimate Epic Battle Simulator. So me and my daughter have had a blast seeing how many Santas it would take to kill 1,000 penguins. You know, how many T-Rexes can Chuck Norris really take out? Here's a clue: over 1,000.
Not over 9,000.
So I mean, it's just it's fun. So been messing around with that, and been messing around with the Friday the 13th a lot too. That's been a good time. So
I've heard that one's a good one.
It's fun. It's a lot of fun.
Excellent. How about you, Mr. Bistro?
Just doing a bunch of Slayer. I got my feet wet in Dungeoneering again. I'm really starting to close in on 120, and I'm almost to the point where I might just go for it. But yeah, I've been really enjoying Slayer, been filling out my codex, and that's been really enjoyable. I hate the idea of like Pokemon and everything, but, you know. There's a recipe, and it's right, and it works.
All right, fair enough. Well, me this week on RS, I have been doing a little bit of Slayer here and there, some Dark Beasts, some Corrupted Dust Devils. I don't know how to explain this, but I don't feel that engaged by Slayer. I don't know why. You guys have any ideas?
You gotta get better drops.
That will help.
Ripper Demons.
I mean, combat-wise, it just feels like it's too simple with Revolution just sitting there. And they die.
You can take that off. You can do manual.
I know, but then I can't watch stuff, and I can't do stuff as well.
Well, you know, I mean, one or the other, Shane. Come on now.
Legacy mode?
Well, if you're
complaining that it's boring, then you're on the wrong setting.
Right.
Yeah.
Because it can be enjoyable if you're actually making an effort to conserve food, do best DPS, and that kind of stuff. Like, there's a method to the madness, and I don't think there's a better Slayer creature to do it on than the Crystal Shapeshifters. For me, personally.
Okay.
Man, you must go all out, because I just buckle down, grin and bear it. But
with Crystal Shapeshifters, I hate like spending tons of money on food. So you know what I do? I just bind them, and then I'll attack them as soon as they're unbound. Then I do the back step and the forward step with Mage. And
sounds like you're doing a dance.
You're dancing. Okay.
Yeah, I'm dancing.
Yeah. See, I have a very different approach, because I just try to stack stuff. So I'll stack my Vampirism, or I stack my Vampirism Scrimshaw. I'm wearing full tank Tetsu. And then we just go in and let them have it and run Soul Split, and hopefully you don't have to eat as much. You do enough damage that way. But yeah.
All right. But aside from that, I have managed to go through my stack of 100+ Juju farming potions that I made way back when I was getting 120 farming. So I went back to Herblore Habitat and restocked on my seeds that I can get from there to make those potions. So hopefully that'll be a good amount of Juju farming potions that I can make. Back in on that, but aside from that, just a little bit of Ark Island hopping and planning next steps for that RuneScape character. So,
cool.
All right, well, we'll be back next week to discuss the Magister. Of course, presuming nothing happens between now and then, and it arrives and we can fight it, So until then, yeah, we'll see you next week, and thank you for sharing your time with us.
Bye-bye.
Bye.